Today is Friday, September 25th, and this is International Edition of The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, demands for justice for Breonna Taylor continue.
He unilaterally put his thumb on the scales of justice and exonerated these police officers for killing Breonna Taylor in the sanctity of her own home.
Plus, U.S. lawmakers accuse the head of Voice of America's parent agency of undermining its journalism.
He should resign, and if he doesn't, the president should fire him.
Also ahead, the Fridays for Future climate strikes restart. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the U.S. Protests continued across the country Thursday night after a grand jury on Wednesday filed no charges against three white police officers for killing black woman Breonna Taylor in March. Demonstrators gathered in her hometown Louisville, Kentucky.
Show me what democracy looks like!
This is what democracy looks like!
Taylor! Say her name!
Breonna Taylor!
All street!
Our street!
All street!
Our street!
Protests also took place in Los Angeles, where a vehicle ran through a crowd of anti-racist protesters, injuring one person, the AP reports. In Portland, Oregon, a flashpoint city for protests demanding racial justice, a police union building was set on fire. Louisville police officers Brett Hankison, Jonathan Mattingly, and Miles Cosgrove killed Taylor when they burst into her apartment to serve a so-called no-knock warrant and fired their weapons. She was sleeping. Her boyfriend shot at the police. He says he thought there was a break-in. Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron said his investigation showed the officers acted in self-defense. Cameron did announce charges against one officer for wanton endangerment for bullets fired that could have hurt Taylor's neighbors, but not for the bullets that killed Taylor herself. Massive protests across the U.S. for the past 3 months have called for justice for Taylor, along with George Floyd, who died in police custody in Minnesota in May. Benjamin Crump is a leading civil rights attorney in the U.S. and is representing Breonna Taylor's family. He spoke to me this morning from Louisville.
Coming a week after this historic settlement where the city agreed to compensate the family $12 million, which is substantial, one of the highest amounts ever paid out for a black woman in a wrongful death in a police shooting case, and the systematic reforms that the city agreed to was significant. But to have this decision by Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron was devastating to the family of Breonna Taylor, as well as me and my legal team, because we are baffled as to what did Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron put forth before this grand jury. Did he offer any evidence on behalf of Breonna Taylor? And if he didn't, he unilaterally put his thumb on the scales of justice and exonerated these police officers for killing Breonna Taylor in the sanctity of her own home and denied her from having her day in court and denied her from getting justice. And that's why we are demanding that the transcripts from the grand jury proceedings be released, because we want to know if Breonna had any voice in those proceedings. For 191 days, we declared, say her name, and he did not put her name in the indictment once.
Now, what do you think these three officers should be charged with?
Daniel Cameron, the Kentucky Attorney General, should at least charge them with second-degree manslaughter, which encompasses the reckless manslaughter definition, which is to recklessly shoot into a building blindly without knowing where the bullets are going. I mean, he charged wanton endangerment for the white neighbors in the apartment next to Breonna, but he didn't charge wanton endangerment for the bullet that went into the black neighbor's apartment above Breonna Taylor, nor did he charge wanton endangerment for the bullets that went into Breonna Taylor's apartment. And regrettably, and worst of all, he didn't charge for the bullets that went into Breonna Taylor's body with a wanton murder charge. And it's ironic, quite literally, when you think about it, he charged a police officer for missing shooting black people.
Beyond the specific details of this case, what does this speak of more broadly about the criminal justice system in America?
Well, it says that the pattern of disrespect of black women continues. It says that with the legacy of Breonna Taylor, regardless of what this grand jury proceeding was, we would define her legacy. And in defining her legacy, her family wants to prevent future Breonna Taylors from happening. They want to declare that Breonna Taylor life matters. As I continue to declare, black women lives matter too, America.
That was U.S. civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump, who represents Breonna Taylor's family. Young climate activists resumed their Fridays for Future climate strikes in person today after holding protests virtually for months due to the coronavirus outbreak. Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg started the strikes in 2018 when she was 16 years old, demanding immediate climate action. On Friday, Thunberg and other activists held a socially distanced protest outside the Swedish parliament. They held banners reading, "Stop denying the climate is dying" and "Don't be a fossil fool." Here's Thunberg.
We need to treat the climate crisis as a crisis. It's just as simple as that. The climate crisis has never once been treated as a crisis. And unless we treat it as a crisis, we won't be able to so-called solve it. Well, the main hope is, as always, to try to affect... to have an impact on the level of awareness and the public opinion so that people will start becoming more aware of the climate crisis, so that we build up this pressure on the people in power so that something happens. If we are not allowed to be more than 50 people, then we won't be more than 50 people. Then we will be fewer people and more spread out. We are striking on a few hundred places in Sweden today.
After the protest, Thunberg rode her bike to school. Students are also taking to the streets in Thailand, which has seen weeks of protests against the government. Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
Thailand has seen weeks of high-profile campus protests for democracy. But the country's youngest are stepping up to make their demands heard too. 15-year-old Benjamapor Neva, or Ploy, is one of the bad ones, part of a viral movement that literally call themselves bad students. They're taking aim at the traditionalism that runs through Thailand schools. The royal anthem plays every morning and students must not question authority. Critics say schools instill more compliance to authority than education. Ploy is one of those demanding freedom of expression in the classroom.
The problem with the education ministry stems from its bureaucracy. In our opinion, it sucks. We're often told to keep waiting, and in the end, the plans for development of Thai education would be stuck with someone somewhere. In the end, nothing gets improved.
The bad students take their name from a university activist who wrote that in his time in high school, those that spoke out are labeled the bad ones. Ploy and a dozen friends from other schools have issued their demands under the bad student banner, calling for teachers to stop punishing students for expressing their political views and rules like uniforms and dress code that they think are outdated and more. And if Thailand's education minister can't meet their demands, they want him to step down.
They control everything on our body from head to toe. The ribbons have to be of the same color, the same widths. We have to wear the same uniform dresses, even the same socks.
Those who question Thailand's school system point to OECD scores in reading, maths, and science, trailing behind neighboring Malaysia and Singapore. A protest weeks ago in Bangkok saw students turn out from more than 50 schools, raising a three-finger salute inspired by the movie Hunger Games. 17-year-old Pika Lot Pari Sanyu is another student leader.
There's a viral saying that our first dictatorship is in school. They are trying to instill in us that we are only the little people in an authoritarian society. This means that a lot of our rights have been violated.
The students have scored some small victories so far. The education minister has personally met and engaged with students at two recent rallies. He's also bowed to one of their demands by relaxing rules that set hair length and styles for both male and female students.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan. This is VOA. France has opened a terror investigation following a knife attack today that wounded two people near the old Paris offices of the Charlie Hebdo newspaper. Once again, journalists were targeted. Two members of a French production agency were stabbed as they took a cigarette break outside. Police say they have arrested a suspect. It is unclear what motivated the Friday attack or whether it had any link to Charlie Hebdo, which moved offices after Islamic extremists attacked the office in 2015, killing 12 people. A Paris trial for 14 people accused of assisting the killers is ongoing. You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump has said he would not commit to a peaceful transfer of power if he loses the November election. He also again questioned the legitimacy of an expected increase in mail-in voting due to the coronavirus pandemic. Recent polling indicates that significantly more Democrats plan to vote by mail than Republicans. VOA's Brian Padden reports Trump's comments came as both parties prepare for the likelihood of a bitterly contested presidential election in November.
The partisan divide over mail-in voting could lead to what some pundits are calling a contested red mirage election. Under that scenario, President Trump might claim victory after securing an early lead on election night, but eventually lose to Democratic Party rival Joe Biden as absentee ballots are counted in the days that follow. Calling mail-in voting fraudulent and a scam, Trump predicts there could be legal challenges to the ballot count that would ultimately be decided by the Supreme Court. This is one reason he has cited for nominating a replacement to recently deceased liberal justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg before the election.
I think this will end up in the Supreme Court, and I think it's very important that we have nine justices.
Analysts note that while there is no evidence of widespread vote-by-mail fraud, as the president has alleged, these mail-in ballots do have a higher rejection rate, mostly because voters fail to fill them out properly. Also, as happened during this year's primary elections in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, some states experienced long delays in counting the surge of mail-in ballots. Hans von Spakovsky is a former federal election commissioner now at the Heritage Foundation.
The more you encourage people to vote by mail, the larger the number of people who will be disenfranchised and their votes aren't going to count.
The Supreme Court's role in all of this, if any, remains to be seen. Sam Berger is a political analyst at the Center for American Progress.
Hopefully we won't be in a situation in which we're asking justices to rule on a case that will decide the outcome of the election. I think that would be very problematic for democracy.
In the closely contested 2000 presidential election, the Supreme Court ruled on a vote recount dispute in Florida that essentially provided Republican George W. Bush a victory over former Democratic Vice President Al Gore by one electoral vote. Gore then conceded, saying it was for the good of the country, despite winning the overall popular vote. President Trump, when asked Wednesday if he would commit to a peaceful transfer of power if he loses the election, said only we are going to see what happens. With partisan tensions so high, both sides fear a bitterly contested election could spark political clashes between right-wing militias and radical leftists. Brian Padden, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. lawmakers have reacted to Trump's comments. For more, I spoke to VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
It all started when the president was asked a question from a reporter that he called on Wednesday. The question concerned whether the president would guarantee a peaceful transition of power. And the president replied, as he does quite often, going off onto a bit of a tangent and not directly answering the question. But he said, we're going to see what happens, and then mentioned that he's been complaining very strongly about the ballots. And then on Thursday, saying that we want to make sure the election is honest, and I'm not sure it can be. This was just a couple of hours after the White House press secretary tried to assure reporters and the American public that the president would accept the results of a free and fair election and he will accept the will of the American people. But in the eyes of Democrats and others who are concerned, there's a lot of wiggle room in that. The president could claim that because of issues with the mail-in ballots without much evidence that it was not a free and fair election.
And what's the response been from Democrats and Republicans?
Democrats have expressed alarm and outrage. But what we have seen from Republicans, including senior Republicans on Capitol Hill, are some measured comments, but very clearly stating that, as Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, tweeted on Thursday, the winner of the November 3rd election will be inaugurated on January 20th. And Lindsey Graham, who's another Republican senator and quite close to the president, went on the Fox News channel and said, if Republicans lose, we will accept the result. And Senator Bernie Sanders, who lost in the Democratic primary election to Joe Biden, gave a speech in Washington on Thursday saying that Trump is prepared to undermine American democracy in order to stay in power. So Democrats very alarmed by these comments and not at all appeased by what the White House press secretary has had to say on Thursday.
Now, it's not so common for Republicans to disagree publicly with Trump. Is there any indication why this incident was different?
Republicans feel that these comments by the president could hurt their party at the ballot box on November 3rd. And we have early voting starting already in some states. Perhaps they're also concerned that the president might try to create some type of constitutional crisis. There are all sorts of scenarios being reported by different newspapers and magazines of what Republicans and Trump could do to throw things into chaos if he appears to be losing. So we'll see if the president backs off of this or continues to double down. And then how do these leading Republicans react to that if the president increases this sort of rhetoric?
That was VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. The U.S. Agency for Global Media, or USAGM, is a government entity that oversees the country's government-funded international broadcasting. The agency administers a handful of broadcasting companies, including The Voice of America. But actions by the new USAGM CEO, Michael Pack, have raised eyebrows. U.S. lawmakers issued a subpoena to Pack to appear before a congressional committee and answer questions. But Pack did not show up to the hearing on Thursday. At the hearing, lawmakers from both parties said they feared the Voice of America and other U.S.-funded broadcasters were at risk of losing credibility with foreign audiences because of his actions. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has that story.
From Hong Kong to Belarus to China, 2020 has been a challenging year for a free press and access to information. But lawmakers Thursday mainly scrutinized the decisions of new U.S. international broadcasting CEO Michael Pack, who ignored a congressional subpoena to appear and answer the committee's questions. House Foreign Affairs Chairman Representative Elliot Engel.
He is making a mockery of a U.S. agency that has long enjoyed strong bipartisan support. And he has shown tremendous disrespect for the committee, our committee, and its role overseeing USAGM. He's the wrong person for the job. He should resign. And if he doesn't, the president should fire him.
Pack is a former documentary filmmaker who has previously headed public and government broadcasting efforts. During his two-year-long confirmation process, Democrats alleged Pack had misused funds from his documentary production company, while Senate Republicans praised his experience. But Pack's decisions since taking charge in June have concerned lawmakers from both parties. The Open Technology Fund, a group that uses U.S. government grants to promote internet freedom worldwide, is suing USAGM, alleging it breached its contracts by withholding $18 million in funds. Republican Representative Michael McCaul.
CEO Pack has ignored the will of Congress and withheld millions of dollars in funding from OTF. This is not a typical D.C. policy discussion. I believe his actions damaged support during the height of unrest in Hong Kong, and they are continuing to do so today in Belarus. Their tragic lack of support to freedom and democracy movements is also regrettable.
Ambassador Karen Kornbluh, former OTF board member.
The goal is not to resolve evidence-based concerns, but rather to discredit OTF. More devastating, the agency continues to withhold nearly $20 million in congressionally allocated funds, forcing OTF to halt 49 out of its 60, or 80% of its ongoing Internet Freedom programs.
In June, PAC fired several executives in what Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey called a wholesale firing spree. Jamie Fly, former president of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.
To date, more than 3 months later, no successors have been named to replace me or my counterparts at the other networks. Sadly, CEO PAC's arrival has brought only more chaos and uncertainty to U.S. international broadcasting. The turmoil could not come at a worse time.
USAGM has been criticized in a government audit for improperly conducting security checks on some of its journalists, an issue some Republicans praised PAC for addressing. Representative Scott Perry, Republican.
The reforms undertaken by Mr. PAC have undergone a significant amount of public scrutiny, as they should. But USAGM's poor vetting procedures over those last decades continue to threaten U.S. national security, and it's entirely the fault of those who mismanaged the process.
But one decision was roundly criticized by lawmakers from both parties. PAC ordered a security review that resulted in a failure to renew the J-1 visas of foreign journalists working at VOA. Democratic Representative Brad Sherman.
We bring people here. We ask them to be honest and to speak truth to countries where speaking truth can get you killed or at least imprisoned. Then Mr. Park refuses to file the application to extend their J-1 visas, which means they're subject to deportation to the very place that we ask them to tell truth to a country where truth is illegal.
At least five VOA journalists have departed the country since their work permits expired, and as many as 20 more are expected to leave by the end of the year. PAC has defended its focus on security by suggesting being a journalist could be a cover for being a spy. Jamie Fly, former president of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.
It's incredibly dangerous for the USAGM head to start basically writing the press release that the Kremlin can then turn around and use the next week about USAGM journalists.
In a letter to Chairman Engel, PAC said he could not appear before the committee due to a scheduling conflict and offered several possible dates for his testimony in October when the U.S. House is expected to be out of session. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
That's it for our show today. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
America's commitment to unalienable rights at home has proved a beacon of hope for men and women abroad pursuing their own liberties. The recently released Commission on Unalienable Rights report stresses the importance of American leaders championing human rights as a guiding principle of U.S. foreign policy, said Peter Berkowitz, Director of Policy Planning at the State Department.
At a minimum, it is important for our leaders to speak forcefully about the American conviction rooted in the American Declaration of Independence, rooted in the American form of government, that all legitimate power, political power, springs from the consent of the governed, and the first purpose of government is to secure the rights that inhere in all persons. Championing that is a crucial part of American foreign policy.
The commission report also found that the United States can be most effective in championing human rights abroad when it protects those rights at home, said Mr. Berkowitz. And finally, human rights must be cultivated in society so they become firmly rooted in the political culture, said Director Berkowitz.
The protection of human rights, championing of human rights, these are not actions one that come automatically. They need to be cultivated. How are they cultivated, this respect for human rights? Cultivated in families, in communities, in an educational system, in a public political culture of a certain type that fosters and citizens a certain sensibility which teaches them to respect the rights inherent in all persons.
For the promotion of human rights abroad to succeed, noted Director Berkowitz, it is crucial to focus not only on the Declaration of Independence, but also the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, in order to find a small core of fundamental rights that can serve as a standard for politics everywhere.
That was an editorial reflecting the view.